Now, my whole point of focusing on a Bible college is that today most people have no idea what that is. We've completely lost the concept of Bible college. Today, folks talk about faith-based institutions, religious colleges, etc., and they're sort of just merged and lumped in with all the secular colleges. There used to be, and still is among a handful, but there used to be a very common concept that there was such a thing as a Bible college. A Bible college was different, unique, separate, and that the purpose of a Bible college was to train people for the work of the Lord. And that it, as a result, it did not operate by the same kinds of rules or directions or programs or anything else. Battling in Florida years back, we had to fight for almost 5 years there when they tried to shut down Bible colleges unless they would operate under the direction of the state. And talking to one of the educational bigwigs, and I'm saying, look, so let's just be real honest. On the best day of my life, I don't know how to train government bureaucrats. If you came to me and said, Phil, how do we train government bureaucrats? I would be totally unqualified to help you. I just don't know what classes they need. I don't know how you prepare them. I don't know what kind of program. I said, let's be just equally as honest. I said, on the best day of your life, you don't know how to train a missionary. You don't know how to train a pastor. You don't know how to train an evangelist. So I said, it's just very simple concept to this. We won't try to tell you how to do the things we don't know. You don't try to tell us how to do what you don't know.
The concept of a Bible college has been almost forgotten. And I illustrate it this way. This was just obvious to everybody when I was a kid going to college. You went to Bible college and you wanted to be a teacher. You trained to teach in a Christian school. Nobody anywhere thought that was training you to teach in a public school. Today, people are demanding Christian schools where they say curriculums that can train you for either one. There is no such curriculum. It doesn't exist. Okay? And I want to talk a little bit about the concept of a Bible college, an old-fashioned, old-time Bible college. So I've got some notes in front of you. These notes were originally written when I was president of Landmark Baptist College, and I continue to use them. We used them in class this last year here at Dayspring, and we tried to take out all the references to Landmark. No disrespect to Landmark, but that's not what I'm doing now. And replace it with Dayspring. I'm not sure we got every one of them. So just this was true when I was there, and it's true now. Just to set the stage, Theodore Roosevelt, a thorough knowledge of the Bible is worth more than a college education. Next one, I don't know who said it, but a Christian school without a basic, well-defined biblical philosophy is like a boat without a rudder. Such a boat is only able to go where the stream is flowing, and the cold, hard facts of life indicate that fundamentalism is not in the mainstream of educational philosophy. Unless great care is taken, a Christian institution in today's world will find itself drifting to that mainstream and carried where it does not intend or really want to go. Boy, I believe that is what's happening. Our Bible colleges, for the most part, do not resemble what they were when I first came into ministry 44 years ago. And it was always my thought when I was in Bible college, I wanted to be a Bible college teacher one day. The opportunity came quicker than I had expected. At the college I had attended, there was a wonderful teacher there. He's in his mid-80s, brilliant man. Very knowledgeable in Greek and Hebrew, marvelous teacher. He'd pastored for over 50 years, so he had a very practical application of things. Just spending, you know, the latter years of his life as a Bible college professor. Just great. But during orientation week, he passed away during the middle of the night, 2 days before the teaching of classes is actually supposed to start. So they are scrambling to find teachers to cover for him. So scrambling and so desperate, they would even put a 23-year-old kid in that spot. So I really got early. I mean, my thought press all the way through is I want to do this someday. Now all of a sudden I get an opportunity, but when I get an opportunity, that's an interesting challenge because I've got 48 hours
may have been 72, I don't know, but something like that, to get the first class ready. And they had me teaching United States history because they knew I was a history buff, and I'm teaching Life of Christ. And he was a teacher. He was actually marvelous, but he would get up and go through the textbook, and he didn't really as such have notes for the specific class, so there was nothing to give me. And hey, man, you're a Bible college teacher now. But I did understand this. What folks needed in Life of Christ was enough understanding of the life of Christ to be able to use it in ministry. And no false assumptions that this was any other kind of college. Even United States history, I understood. And that is the foundation of the United States history books out of my table today, the very beginning of them, that folks needed a Christian perspective on United States history to successfully pastor. So I understood that. I was starting from scratch. I was probably happy those early classes were not on tape. I suspect I rather taught them with some enthusiasm, at least. But I'm glad they're not on tape. But there was never any doubt to me. There was never doubt any around it. This wasn't a debate back then. When you said Bible college, everybody knew you were doing something different and distinct. The state didn't try and regulate you. The state did not try and tell you how it was supposed to be. Nobody got mad because their kids' credits were not accepted into a secular college because nobody expected that would ever happen. It was Bible college. It was a unique, distinct form of education. Well, eventually the state comes along and tries to steal the word college and claim that it belongs to them. Had those conversations in Florida. I've had those conversations in Illinois as we battle with some folks in the educational establishment here in Illinois. We're not battling with all of them. Some of them are pretty understanding, but some of them we're really battling with. And this even became an issue. We had a hearing in front of the State Senate Education Committee. And a representative of the Board of Education was there and wanted to make the case that the word college and the term bachelor and science and degree all belong legally to the state. And so immediately one of the senators said, well, show us that law. It says it belongs to the state. And give us a definition. And they went out and got a dictionary and brought the dictionary in. And there's they looked up Bachelor of Science, Bachelor of Arts, College, etc. There's nothing in the dictionary definitions that say it belongs to the state. And so a lady gave them a definition. And they said, where did you get that? And she didn't want to tell them. And she eventually had to admit she just made it up, just right then, sitting there in the hearing. And that really turned the result of the hearing against them, I think, in a hurry after that. Guy said, you just gave us a definition you made up and acted as if that was the law? You know, what kind of dummies do you take us for? The concept that there was something different, a Bible college, and that has been my position. We fought for a law in Florida that we eventually got, and the whole concept behind the law was this. I actually got to write the text of it and the three parts in it. I said, if you have a religious name, a religious purpose, and you don't take money from the state, you're not under the jurisdiction of the state. Okay? Now, I'm not for a second suggesting that if you take money from the state, they don't have a right to say something about how that money is used. And nobody's talking about that. And our law here passed unanimously in our state senate. And we have not gotten, it's not been presented in the House. And it wasn't allowed to be presented in the House, but that's another story. Well, this is the question. How do we prepare people for full-time ministry? And the answer, of course, is you have to have something uniquely designed for the set of circumstances they will face in the future serving the Lord. Down in Colombia, right on the border with Venezuela, I have been to a college in the jungle. It's an amazing place, amazing situation. They don't have anything that resembles schools like we have them. But the Lord has done incredible work down there. They have a couple hundred young men that want to be preachers. So they started a Bible college.
Every 3 months, they bring in a teacher for 2 weeks. And I had the privilege of going there and teaching the book of Daniel for 2 weeks. Amazing experience. And look forward to going back again. Everybody said it's called the Jungle Bible College.
Everybody understands this is something different. Nobody asked for government money. The government leaves it alone. Everybody knows you're doing something completely different.
When I started in ministry 43, 44 years ago, when you used the term Bible college, everybody in the United States understood you were doing something different. It was specifically designed to train people for full-time Christian work, and you used the term Bible college because that's what it was. That was the term that described training people. Well, the states have come along and tried to change that today. We'll talk more about that later, but they say the word college belongs to them. It doesn't. They can't have the word college without taking away our religious liberty, and we'll explain that later. I just go through these notes together with you, if you wouldn't. And the things that thou hast heard of me among many witnesses, the same commit thou to faithful men who shall be able to teach others also. 2 Timothy 2:2. That's the principle. We teach people so that they can teach people. So that they can teach people. So that they can teach people. Scripture makes it clear that a novice is not qualified for ministry. Not a novice, lest being lifted up with pride, you fall into reproach and the snare of the devil. This is happening all over the world. There are explosions in church planting. Without parallel increases in the number of Bible college training programs. Consequently, churches are being pastored by people that are extremely well-meaning. You know, you got a church, you need a pastor, but who are not ready or prepared. And the number of those schools that, and I don't mean to be totally disparaging, some of them, in spite of everything you could list on paper, are actually doing a pretty good job, but some of them become really awful in the preparation of people for the ministry. Every minister of the gospel must have some level of training or experience that qualifies him for the ministry. And everybody got that? Something has to qualify you. You don't just walk up and say, I'm ready. Everyone God uses in a great way goes through a time of preparation. Moses spent 40 years in the palace of Pharaoh learning principles of administration. He spent 40 years in the desert learning about life in the desert. 80 years of training. All of this was God's preparation so that Moses could spend 40 years leading the government of Israel in the desert. And so if you lead the government of Israel in the desert, you need to know something about government and you know something about desert. Moses trained Joshua, Elijah trained Elisha, and Jesus trained the apostles. Paul spent 3 years in Arabia being prepared by God to be the apostle to the Gentiles. He needed this time of preparation even though he already had rabbinic training, a secular education, and even though he was already called to preach.
He was an extraordinarily educated man when he got saved. But he still needed training because he wasn't trained in what he needed for ministry. A man that I respected incredibly well, Dr. James Wells, when I was a freshman in college, he was pastoring the largest black church in Indianapolis. And he's been a modernist, had modernist training, gone to a modernist church, and he got saved. He had earned doctorate in New Testament interpretation from modernist school. He's in his early 40s. He gets saved. He shows up for Bible college, and he's in the same classes with us 18-year-old freshmen. I've often wondered, say, he must have had to spend his time refraining from laughing out loud at us all the time. But he started as a freshman in Bible college, even though he had an earned doctorate, because he was not trained in what he needed to have as a preacher of the gospel. And then he graduated and later on would start a Bible college to train black preachers. He got taught. But I had so much respect for him, even as an 18-year-old freshman, for going back to the beginning and wanting to get taught the basics. Okay? And he didn't wave around pieces of paper that said I had degrees, etc. The sons of the prophets. One example of the training of God's servants is found in the Old Testament in the story of the sons of the prophets. The sons of the prophets were not the same people as the company of the prophets. This is obscured in many New English translations, which mistakenly give both groups the same name. You read through the King James, Company of the Prophets. This is a reference to folks who are already exercising the gift of prophecy. They are a distinct religious order. Other places it refers to the School of Prophets. In a modern English translation, well, that's just two different ways of referring to the same group. It is not. They are the sons of the prophets. The sons of the prophets were people who were being trained in the proper way to serve the Lord. These students were the spiritual sons of the prophets. You see the verses in 1 and 2 Kings to illustrate what I just said. These students were the spiritual sons of the prophets. Paul uses the word the same way when he describes Timothy as his son in the faith. Not his biological son. He's the one that he's training, that he's encouraging. Okay? We reproduce ourselves in those that we train. Of course, if you never train anybody, you never reproduce yourself. There was a specific program for training these men to be most effective in the work of God. Now, you had to have the gift of prophecy. But even if you had the gift of prophecy, you had to know how to use it in such a way that was a benefit. That may have included ways to speak in proper Hebrew grammar so you would be understood when you were giving folks the lesson. Or the proper ethics of how you handled yourself as a prophet. You might go on and on with that. The word college is used in the King James Bible in 2 Kings 22:14. And 2 Chronicles 34:22 to describe this training. Many commentators and translators have assumed this was a mistake on the part of the King James translators. Some have even suggested they did not understand the word college or that it didn't have its present meaning in 1611, which is incredibly stupid. Almost all the King James translators were connected with colleges and they knew exactly what the word meant. Higher education. As an alternative reading, they provided the word school in the margin. And exactly what they were talking about. The Hebrew word Mishnah is the word in question here. It comes from a root Hebrew word which means second. Okay? It could be used with second anything. Because of the assumption there were no schools in the time of Josiah, and because of an untrustworthy bias against the King James Bible, most scholars have assumed that this is, quote, an unfortunate translation. Many translations assume that it must refer to a second section of the city of Jerusalem. It was not unusual to refer to four sections of a city, four quarters. It just as simple as that. They divide a city into four sections, and this was in the first quarter, and that was in the third quarter, and so forth. So many translations, that must be why they use a word that means second. And so they translate this word as second district or second quarter. As examples, New American Standard, New King James, New English Bible, Revised Standard Version, International Version, Living Bible, etc. Inexplicably, the contemporary English version translate the word as the northern part of Jerusalem. Most Bible commentators follow the idea of the second quarter, second district. See Liberty, Commentary, Kyle and Delitch, even Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown, which is usually better than this, Bible Knowledge Commentary. Matthew Henry refers to a second set of royal buildings, apart from the royal palace. However, it's a mistake to assume so lightly that the King James translators were wrong. In the Jewish Targums, commentaries in the Old Testament, the word for Mishnah is used to refer to the second education or higher education that Jewish priests and prophets received. You find that in International Standard Bible Encyclopedia. In fact, Young's Analytical Concordance defines the word this way, second part or place of repetition or college. According to Strong's A Concise Dictionary of the Words in the Hebrew Bible, Mishnah carries the idea of a repetition, a duplicate, or a double. In other words, you got an education that was basic, and now you get another one. It's a second education. According to Strong, possible translations include college, copy, double, failings, next, second, or twice. Huldah, who was in the college,
was a respected prophetess. Y'all ready? She's highly remembered in Jewish tradition. She was one of only two non-members of the royal family ever to be buried in the royal tombs of Jerusalem. The Jews clearly had a program of higher education or a second education for prophets, the sons of the college, sons of the prophets. The King James translators considered it far more likely the Lord was commenting on her function in training the prophets, the college, than the Lord was concerned with what part of town she was living in. Again, we're about to... She's the keeper of the wardrobe. She's in charge of the clothing.
You got a Bible college. Well, no, 10, 30, 40, 50 Bible college students. Is it possible for one person to be in charge of their clothing and how everything's supposed to be done, et cetera, et cetera? How would you like to put one person in charge of the second quarter of the clothing of the city? I'm just telling you, that would be a tough job. City of Jerusalem. Okay, 1/4 of the people, you keep all their clothing. A lot of other lessons I don't really go through there. It appears there was some concern expressed about how you dressed. Because they had a lady that was a prophet in charge of the clothing, seeing to it that everybody wore the right clothing. Tie matches your socks. Yeah, whatever. Whatever was the moment for that. And frankly, ladies would be better than that than men in general. Looking at some of the clothing I've sometimes seen in Bible college classes, I have sometimes said, you know, we need a Huldah here that would check all that. Well, their translation is just as possible linguistically as the translation of their critics, and far more in keeping with Jewish tradition history. It's far more in keeping with the important circumstances of the content of the discussion. Huldah was the keeper of the wardrobe. This implies you're in charge of the clothing. Apparently those involved in second education could not wear just anything that they wanted. Huldah supervised the clothing part of their training. Certainly she didn't supervise the wardrobe for the whole second quarter of Jerusalem. The sons of the prophets had to build their own buildings. They did not go to Jezebel and Ahab for approval, guidance, or finance. Yes. Is it? Second, thank you. Second Kings 6, 1 through 7. Thank you. No, that's great. I appreciate that. We'll get it fixed next time. Yeah, it has, actually. They did not go to Jezebel and Ahab for approval, guidance, or finances. Jesus trained the apostles. Jesus gave special care to the training of the apostles. They were set aside for the ministry. And he goeth up into a mountain and calleth unto him whom he would, and they came unto him. Paul, a servant of Jesus Christ, called to be an apostle, separated into the gospel of God. The apostles were given special training by Christ himself. They were taught many lessons personally by Jesus. They had to be prepared before they were turned loose in the ministry. Everybody God uses has an appropriate time of preparation first. Is a biblical basis for this. Well, come back to that. Bible College Ministry Today. Today's specialized program for training fundamental Bible believing preachers are referred to as Bible colleges, unless you're dealing with the state of Illinois, which calls them faith-based training institutions. And talk about how even faith-based training institutions need to be regulated by the state, because that's the only way you can protect students, is regulate by the state. Dr. Edward C. Coghill, in Marvelous in Our Eyes, A Dynamic History of Baptist Bible Colleges in America. It's the only history of Bible colleges I've ever been able to find. There is a wonderful book on Bible colleges, and about how they're corrupted, that's written by Don Jasmine. Those are the only two books on the subject of Bible colleges I've ever been able to find. But he writes in here, central purpose. The central purpose which characterizes Bible institutes and Bible colleges is to prepare students for Christian service at home and abroad, either as full-time or lay workers.
The first Bible schools in America were established for this purpose. Bible colleges can be organized in several ways. A Bible college can be operated by an individual or family. This is unusual today, but it's been common in the past. A Bible college can be operated by a denominational or associational organization. Very common today. Bible college can be operated by a religious organization like a mission board or an other nonprofit organization.
A Bible college can be operated by a board of pastors. A Bible college can be operated by a local church. These last four, there are a great number of examples of all this. And the situation here at Day Spring Bible College here is kind of different because it's operated by a board and by a local church. It's owned by a local church. Local church has absolute control over it. It's actually operated by a board of directors, which has some pastors and some other folks. It's just different. I am not familiar with that as a common way of doing things. How about local church Bible colleges? It's the conviction of Day Spring Bible College that Bible colleges should be operated as part of a local church. Of course, it would be wise for our local churches to invest in, help with, and encourage good Bible college and other churches. This is consistent with the New Testament pattern and is the most practical form of organization. And then I'm going to repeat a long section here that was written by Greg Baker, Faithway Baptist College in Ajax. He is with the Lord now. I had his permission when I first duplicated this. And his explanation of this was good, so good I didn't see a need to redo it. Okay. So our conviction at Faithway Baptist College of Canada that the local church is God's program for this present day. The New Testament is replete with scripture passages that speak to this topic. This basic tenet that serves as a foundation is not something to be skimmed over or to be taken lightly. The local New Testament church is to be instrumental in the transmission of truth. It was the great church planting apostle that stated by inspiration, "If I tarry long, thou mayest know how thou oughtest to behave thyself in the house of God, which is the church of the living God, the pillar and ground of truth." God established local churches, and he carefully enables them to serve as guardians of his truth. Faithway Baptist Church is a custodian of God's truth. To this end, the perpetuating of this responsibility necessitates education. In our local church, we've been given a mandate from God to take this educational responsibility to the level of preparing God-called men and women for full-time Christian work. It's our conviction that the training of men and women through the framework and function of a local church is in direct correlation with God's clear New Testament instruction. Recently, a man spoke to me of his son, who's presently attending a liberal arts Christian college. He started school there in preparation for a non-ministry-related degree and career. Now the student has been called by God for ministry. The father stated, "The call to ministry now changes things concerning the place of his education." Everybody's saying, if you're called by God to start a local church, pastor a local church, or serve as a staff member in a local church, the best place to receive your training is at an institution in the leadership of the pastor and the authority of a local church. To this, we heartily agree. Now, if I could put it in these terms, which to me makes perfect sense. It does until the state of Illinois, but let me make perfect sense. If you want to be an airline mechanic, what kind of school do you go to?
Airline
mechanic school. Okay. There you're going to be trained by?
Airline
mechanics, I hope. Okay. I hope the planes I fly on have been serviced by airline mechanics who are trained by airline mechanics. If you want to be a barber, do you go to airline mechanic school? I'm not sure I want my hair cut by a barber who got his training at airline mechanic school.
If you want to be a doctor, where do you get your training? Airline mechanic school, of course. No, medical school. And I'm quite sure if someone performs surgery on me, I want them trained by surgeons. So if somebody ministers to me or my family or my loved ones, teach at a Christian school my grandchildren will be attending in Florida, guess where I want them trained? Okay.
if my daughter-in-law called and said, by the way, we're taking Andrew in to have surgery done by a guy, and I want you to know it's very safe because he got straight A's in flight school. Got to be a brilliant guy. Not just anybody gets straight A's in flight school. I'm on my way to Florida to get something done. Okay, I want him taught and prepared for life by Christians who have been taught and prepared for life by Christians who have been taught and prepared for life by Christians, etc.
There's much to be said about being taught by pastors instead of professors. For all pastors are gifts to the church, according to Ephesians 4, to perfect the saints for the work of ministry. There's value in learning on Monday from those you have observed and served with on Sunday. Being able to put into practice what's being promoted and projected in the classroom is valuable. It's not just true of those preparing for the pastorate, but of those preparing for the local church ministries. Christian day school students that are studying to be teachers need to be trained this way. Think of the benefits of seeing teachers who not only outstand in the classroom, but also are committed to their local church. Teachers that serve in the ministry with the students on Sunday and then go slow with them during the week are priceless. I'm sure that one can see the importance of a mission-hearted pastor and congregation in the life of the mission student. One of the key elements a student needs in this type of environment is enthusiasm for the Great Commission. Consider the value of a sacred music course of study where the local church becomes the laboratory. Having musicians that learn to minister and learn that the pastor is the head of the music department is vital to the transmission of the local church philosophy. Faithfully Baptist College of Canada has made many changes since our inception in 1983. We've grown, added programs, increased effectiveness, built buildings, so forth. God's enabled us to make changes along the way. One thing we have not changed and do not intend to change is our subservience to Faithway Baptist Church. Our college does not function outside of our church. I am first and foremost the pastor of Faithway Baptist Church. The deacons of our church will always serve as the governing body of Faithway Baptist College. Faithway Baptist College of Canada is dedicated to promoting, preserving, and perpetuating the New Testament position of pastor-led churches. We're endeavoring to do it not just in precept, but in practice. Pray for us and let us help you prepare for service within the framework of a vibrant independent Baptist church. Okay. At Dayspring Bible College, we say a hearty amen to Dr. Baker's statement. A Bible college trains people for full-time Christian service, pastors, church staff, Christian school teachers, missionaries, etc. A Christian liberal arts university trains people for many secular professions. This training is provided from a Christian perspective and in a Christian atmosphere. Now, I will tell you, in our day and age, and this isn't my area, I'm a Bible college guy. I'm not trying to tell everybody else how to do this. I'm a Bible college guy. I'm a Bible college guy, so I'm not an expert on what I'm about to talk about, Christian liberal arts university. When I was early in the ministry, there were Christian liberal arts universities that were completely separate from government. Everybody that sent their children there knew that. There was no confusion. And they normally did such a good job, their students could go anywhere to do anything relative to what they trained. As states have come more and more down on trying to control Bible colleges, we've had to retreat to the argument that this is a local church ministry, training people for local church ministries. And that's won the day in some states. We won in Florida on that argument, and won in Texas, and won in California, won in Michigan. That does not help the Christian liberal arts universities. It's my own belief they ought to be free too. But the way I have formed the argument and made the argument and been involved doesn't help them. They're going to have to develop their own other champions for that. And I understand that. I don't know the best ways to fight that battle. But the difference between a Bible college and a Christian liberal arts university. Bible college trains people for full-time Christian service. Pastors, church staff, Christian school teachers, missionaries, etc. A Christian liberal arts university trains people for many secular professions. The training is provided from a Christian perspective and in a Christian atmosphere. What has happened under the pressure of the last few years? Virtually every Christian liberal arts
college institution I know about has given in to the pressure of government direction. It is not as easy to fight their battle as it is to fight my battle. I'm not trying to be critical when I say that, but there's a reality to that. And because many of them also have a component for training people for the ministry, I no longer recommend sending young people to those schools for the ministry. Nursing might be another discussion. Engineering, I don't know how to figure all that out. But ministry is ministry. And I think they've lost the strength of their potential to train people for ministry because of the compromises they've had to make. Again, I'm not being critical of them. I can't even imagine being in that position. I've never worked in that setting. I wouldn't know how to frame their argument if it was my responsibility. But that's just a reality. Okay? A Bible college has training full-time Christians as its purpose, its focus, its mission. A liberal arts university trains full-time Christian workers as just one of many things that it focuses upon. Well, how do we teach in a Bible college? Okay. There are three main approaches to the classroom in Bible colleges today. It's what's called curriculum-centered, building the teaching around a pre-established curriculum. The student-centered, the school finds out what the students want to learn and teaches it to them. That, I know, sounds bizarre, but is more and more becoming a real thing. I couldn't survive a day in a school oriented that way. I would just absolutely start raving insane and be done. The teacher-centered, the teacher develops the curriculum using whatever tools are available to him. Okay? Day Spring Bible College is a teacher-centered Bible college. We believe that God has gifted teachers, and we work at securing the best teachers available. They develop their own material and use their own style in the classroom. There are three main approaches to the teacher-centered curriculum. Mentoring, which is one-on-one. Modular, students take one class at a time, taught in a concentrated fashion, which is primarily, not always, but primarily what we do here. Or traditional, students take several classes at once, usually taking each class for 2 or 3 hours each week. Any of these will work. It's my own conclusion that with a smaller number of students, as modular is certainly more inexpensive to do and doesn't require as much in terms of facilities. And so there are advantages to that. However, it's also been my experience watching colleges as they get bigger. You get to a certain size where it becomes almost impossible to maintain that, and you have to go to traditional. So, the importance of Bible college. John Mason Peck was used of the Lord to start many churches in western states when it was frontier territory. He wrote this about the importance of Bible colleges. And is manifestly needful. There should be some place to which such young or inexperienced ones might repair and receive the aid with which they are so much need. Some are called to preach when they could scarce read a chapter or a hymn intelligently. How obviously requisite that they should be taught to read the divine word and give the sense and cause the people to understand the records contained in the infallible guidebook.
It just makes sense. You need to train preachers. I see on occasion people that don't believe that today, but they get a lesson quickly. I was preaching one time in Ohio. There were two preachers at night, and that time I was president of a Bible college, and you know they're going to introduce me as the president of the Bible college. The first preacher got up and preached against Bible colleges, his whole sermon, and talked about how proud he was not to have been a Bible college ruined preachers and all that. Yeah, got it. So somebody asked me, of course I spoke afterwards, and somebody asked me how I felt afterwards. I said, I feel like paying him a full-time salary just to go around and preach and say, I did not go to Landmark Baptist College at the end. We had a young man. He had some talent. He had zero maturity, but he had a little bit of talent. Did his freshman year when I was at Landmark, and a pastor is acquainted with him, hired him as a full-time staff member at his church. Went for 1 year. I called the guy and said, please don't do this. You're going to ruin it, ruin him, and you're not going to be happy with the result. So, about 2 months into it, he calls me and says, I think he should stay in college. We're going to send him back.
we'll put him, and actually he asked for money to put him on a plane to send him back. He said, wait a minute, this is not our responsibility. You pay to send him back. And he said, we don't have any money. We're in a mess. I said, well, sorry. And I said, look, he is a mess. If I don't get him out of here quick, I'm going to lose my pastorate. I said, I'm not paying for his plane ticket. I didn't send him up there. And I said, does he have money for tuition? He said, no. He had a little bit of money when he came, but he spent it all. I said, then how is he going to afford to go to school? And he said, well, that's your problem. I said, no, it really isn't. And he said, well, we're putting him on a plane today.
I said, that doesn't mean there's going to be somebody waiting at the airport to pick him up. The whole situation got a lot worse. He eventually sued that church and wanted to come back. We wouldn't take him with a 10-foot pole after the set of circumstances. And
I mean, there was a point, not to the lawsuit, but the pastor had promised to train him. Then he got there and they found out how hard he was to handle, and so the pastor gave up on him pretty quickly. So he was going to sue the church for false whatever. And it was breach of promise. That's exactly what it was. And it was a breach of promise. And I don't recommend suing churches. But I understood his point of being upset. I didn't sympathize with his solution to his being upset.
But I still see this, people who don't believe in Bible college. Sometimes they just arrogant enough about themselves that think who can teach them anything.
I see pastors who desperately don't want to lose a faithful church member, so they want to keep them there and say we'll train them, even though they have nothing going on to train them. No program, no circumstances, no anything. But I absolutely understand John Mason Peck. Even on the frontier, if we're going to have preachers starting churches, they got to know something. They know something about and having a read is not a bad idea. Well, he says, but I cannot bear that our preachers in Illinois and Missouri should continue as ignorant as some of them now are. Which I would say here in Illinois, the same thing about Illinois. There's some who wish to improve their minds and gain useful learning. Young men who commence preaching with very inadequate education will avail themselves of such a school with immense benefit to themselves and the cause. End of quote. Thomas Custis, writing in 1858 in the South Carolina Baptist, wrote, the requisites for an institution of learning are three B's: bricks, books, brains. Our brethren usually begin at the wrong end of the three B's. They spend all of their money for bricks, have nothing to buy books, and must take such brains as they can pick. But our brethren ought to begin at the other end of the three B's. Or to translate that another thought process, the teachers we put in front of our students are the most important thing we do. The better the facilities, glory to God. Here, I started teaching here as a visiting professor when everything was in the church building. And then we got the beautiful campus that we're in now. The beautiful campus is just a lot more fun. And no doubt about it. It's a lot more fun, a lot nicer. It's great. But we were turning out quality young preachers before we had it. Because the real issue is the teachers. Okay? And today, books are less an issue than ever. Because the internet, the college library, people are closing down college libraries. I don't like that. I'll never learn to live with it. But it's happening. And but the issue has always been the teachers. Okay? And
that question will be brought up, you know, whether your school doesn't have, to whoever, your school doesn't have a gym, your school doesn't have this. That's
never what prepared people for ministry. They're nice. Okay? Here, I've spent time in working with two other Bible colleges full-time that did not have gyms. We have three gyms here. I like that better. I really do. I said, why couldn't I have been in a Bible college with a gym when I was young enough to still play? You know. Now that I'm old and decrepit and wouldn't dream of going out into a basketball court, there are three of them available. Lord knows.
In the area of the teachers, some folks have decided that the credential of an earned doctorate is more important than the credential of experience.
Absolutely.
And I'm going to say this in the session I teach tomorrow, but I was at Indiana Baptist College when they thought about going accreditation. And they brought all the people in. And so there were numerous meetings. And I was adamantly opposed to it on several grounds, which I'll talk about tomorrow. But I was adamantly opposed. And we were having a meeting after we'd had all this instruction. And that has got, you'd have to have academic doctorates from accredited institutions, which meant you could, I pointed out to the board when we had the final meeting, this guy said, "Y'all understand, some of you men, 30, 40, 50 years of ministry. Not one of you would be qualified to teach one of our young men how to pastor. And so we'll have to go get, if we do this, the most conservative men with doctorates we can find, which is probably Southern Baptist. Is they're not conservative compared to us. They're probably the closest we could get would be to go to Southern Baptist Convention to get men with earned doctorates, but said none of you men would be qualified to teach our young men to be preachers. And that's when it died. They voted it down right after I said that. And we lived in a different day then. But yeah, the question is not what is the paperwork. The question is what ability does this person have in order to give our young people that which they need in order to be effective servants of the Lord?
Because this is a Bible college should not be a pale copy of a secular college. If it is, it has no purpose. If you're going to get what you would get at a secular college, why not go to a secular college? It will be better for you financially in the long run if you do that. So why should the church have the burden of carrying a college if it's not going to be any better than having a secular college?